each of you for joining us. As many of you may know, we've been having a series of conference calls to discuss various issues related to the Renewable Fuel Standard and EPA's RVO proposal. This will be our last call, and while many of the other calls have focused on issues like the impact of RINs and the impact of ethanol and gas prices and other such things, frankly, the biggest impact of EPA's proposal is on the successful commercialization of cellulosic technologies, and we wanted to finish with this issue. I've asked to join me on the call today Chris Stanley, who is the Executive Vice President for Institutional Affairs at Abengoa Bioenergy, Brian Foody, the President and CEO of Iogen Corporation, Delaine Johnson, the General Manager of Quad County Corn Processors, and Brooke Coleman, the Executive Director of the Advanced Ethanol Council. I'd like to thank them for joining me today, and I will first turn it over now to Chris Stanley.
Thank you very much, Bob. I appreciate that. And thanks to everyone for attending this morning. I'd like to talk just briefly about Abengoa's interest in the proposed rule that EPA has published recently on the RFS volume requirement, and then let you know kind of what our belief of the impact of that rule could be. First, for those of you who don't know, Abengoa is an international company that develops sustainable technologies primarily in energy and environmental areas. We are also an international ethanol producer with 15 facilities located on three continents in Europe, the United States, and Brazil. We've also spent the last 10 years and hundreds of millions of dollars developing cellulosic ethanol technology from start to finish, from laboratory to pilot plant scale to demonstration plant scale, and now we're just completing construction of our first commercial plant, commercial scale cellulosic ethanol plant in Hugoton, Kansas. We've actually completed phase one of the startup of that facility, which is the boiler and the cogeneration, electric cogeneration system, and the ethanol startup is intended to be commenced within the next few weeks. Clearly, in Abengoa's view, the RFS is the single most important investment and market driver in our industry. There's just no doubt about that. It's critical. It's been the primary reason that, frankly, Abengoa has invested over $1 billion in the United States within the last several years, largely because of the RFS and the fact that it does promote investment through guaranteeing a market for products that are produced with new facilities. We believe that the first generation of ethanol is inextricably tied to the second generation of ethanol. We, as a major first generation ethanol producer, have invested heavily in second generation. We believe that the future growth of renewable fuels and ethanol fuels in particular are tied to cellulosic ethanol, second generation technologies. But at the same time, we think that the most likely investors in these new facilities and these new technologies are first generation ethanol producers now. They already have infrastructure available. They have facilities available, and it's a relatively uncomplicated matter to add to an existing facility a new section of a facility that can use additional types of feedstocks that will diversify risks in feedstock exposure and that sort of thing. So, Abengoa's plan has been, for the last 10 years and for these, hundreds of millions of dollars of investments, our plan has been to prove our technology, develop our technology for second-generation ethanol, license that technology to others, both, greenfield plants and new investors and new people who are interested, but largely to first-generation producers in the well over 200 facilities that already exist in the United States, which are prime candidates for expansion into this area. Unfortunately, the EPA's rule basically announcing that they are validating the blood wall and in essence limiting the market of biofuels in the United States to 10% with little chance of exceeding that creates a battle for market share among existing producers and new producers. What that means is investment in first-generation plants, is certainly not the priority, but investments of second-generation plants, we expect it to be done largely by those first-generation producers. And what the EPA's proposed rule would do, in our opinion, is ask those first-generation producers to strand potentially 100 or hundreds of millions of dollars of existing investments in first-generation ethanol plants to invest in second-generation. It's basically put a box around the market for ethanol, limiting that market to 10%, and there's already enough production capacity to produce 10%. So what that means is you'll have first-generation having to fight with second-generation for market share. And this is certainly a primary factor and a primary concern of ours, but in addition, there's another aspect of this, and that is that even if that were not the case, even if second generation were somehow carved out and given its own market, what the EPA has done here is basically place in question the administration's support of this policy, which is only 5 years into a 15-year plan. If that support is questionable, if it is not something that the investment community can count on, frankly, we believe that the impact on this will be dramatic and that this will significantly impact and make it almost impossible for new investors and existing producers to have the confidence that a market will be there in order to invest this large sum of money in a new facility. For Abengoa itself, frankly, we have decided that we are, placing a hold on our evaluations of future investment in bioenergy within the United States until we see what the final rule is and what impact it does have on the markets. We have high hopes that the EPA will reconsider the rule and its impact and perhaps revise this rule, but for us, what this has done is taken our business plan, which was to immediately start licensing technology to other producers after we start up Hugoton, and has forced us to place that on hold and look for other potential investments in other countries. So I don't want to take too long at this point. I'm going to go ahead at this point and turn it over to Brian Foody, who's the president and CEO of Iogen, and then we'll ask for questions at the end of everyone's comments. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chris. I'm Brian Foody with Iogen Corporation. We're developers of cellulosic biofuel technology. We have a substantial alliance with Raízen, who are Brazil's largest ethanol producer, and we're building our first commercial plant using cellulosic biofuel technology with Raízen at their Costa Pinto mill in Piracicaba, Brazil. That facility is converting bagasse, the residue of sugarcane manufacturing, into for sugars and ethanol using classic cellulosic biofuel type technology. That facility will be starting up later this year, and Raízen has announced their intention in Brazil to roll this technology out through their entire manufacturing operation, and that would amount to an investment in over eight major cellulosic facilities. With this technology moving in Brazil, we believe there are huge opportunities in the United States to convert agricultural residues and other cellulosic materials into biofuels and to meet the needs of the RFS. I agree completely with Chris that the RFS is the single most important investment and market driver in America. It is the reason for the investment of $1 billion-plus dollars by numerous players in the area. And it's critical that investors see this as continuing to drive investment. Let me offer some areas of concern. I'll just say to reinforce what Chris said. Cellulosic biofuel has the promise to deliver tens of billions of gallons of ethanol to the United States, but there needs to be a market for that. And essentially, we need to see the E85 and E15 markets grow. Those markets are nascent, and the signals that are created by the RFS, particularly the signals through D6 RIN pricing, are important. We believe it's critical for EPA to create a segment or space in the market for E85 to grow, and to set numbers that will provide incentives for the growth of E85. E85 is going to be in a position to offer very cost-effective fuels to America, and it will create the vision and the space for the growth of cellulosics and the continued prosperity in the corn ethanol sector. And we are very keen to see this happen. We are concerned, following on, and I'll say a different version of Chris's presentation, that if people in America look at the ethanol markets as fixed and bounded, there will be no point or no need to invest in, and no benefit to invest in new technologies for delivering these fuels. And that, I think, would be a shame for America, and it would undermine the good intentions and public policy benefits that the RFS and the Energy Independence and Security Act were intended to promote. We're actively seeking to develop projects in America, and I think our success will in large measure be tied to the types of signals that the RFS gives to investors and to the choices that EPA makes in the coming months. With that brief summary, I will hand things over to Delane Johnson, who is the general manager of Quad County Corn Processors. Delane?
Thank you very much. And Quad County Corn Processors has been in existence for about 12 years. We currently process about 35 million gallons of cornstarch ethanol annually, and we're farmer-owned. We, over the past 3 to 4 years, have developed a technology that we are able to produce ethanol out of the cellulose that is in the corn kernel that we already purchased from the farmer and we already processed through our plant. So in essence, we are taking, you know, more value out of the kernel of corn that we're already purchasing. With that being said, it is cellulosic in nature. In the existing 200 plants in the United States, if they adopted this bolt-on technology, would be able to produce up to 2 billion gallons of cellulosic ethanol on an annual basis. Our strategy is to finish the construction, which we started in July. We anticipate that we'll be starting up this facility in May or June of this year and be under production here in Galva, Iowa, and be producing about 1.8 to 2 million gallons per year of cellulosic ethanol. I guess our next phase that we're currently working on is commercialization and licensing of this technology to other existing plants. And as indicated earlier, there's over 200 of those in the United States. And with that, one of the major concerns we have is with the changes that EPA is discussing at this point, changing the RFS, it is going to definitely impact not only our ability to generate value through the RINs here at Quad County, but more importantly, it's going to create uncertainty of financing for those that look at adopting our technology. And the other thing I have concern about is enzyme and yeast companies that currently are being funded primarily by cornstarch ethanol processing. They're the ones doing research and development on enzymes and yeast for the phase two or cellulosic processes. Those investments are going to be stifled if, in fact, the RFS is changed as indicated, which is going to hinder people's ability to further improve the efficiencies of cellulosic technologies of all kinds. So with that in place, we're also hopeful that the EPA will consider getting back on course so that the investments like ours that have already been put in place because of the incentives that were in place with the RFS will allow not only us to complete that, but others to adopt technologies like ours or others as we move forward. And I think it's also important to note that as we have E15 and E85 available, that is a good thing for the consumer. Without the ability to have the RFS move us through this invisible blend wall, if you will, that EPA is allowing people to talk about, what it does is giving a 90% mandate of petroleum to all of the consumers. So the consumers do not have the choice. I guess what the existing RFS does is gives the consumers choice as well. So with that, I want to turn this over to Brooke Coleman.
Thanks, Delane. Brooke Coleman, Advanced Ethanol Council. You've heard from several companies that are actually in the process of building the plants and developing the technologies and innovating, that this is a backward step for their goals. I don't think I can add on there. I represent a number of these companies, but what I do want to focus on very, very briefly is exactly what the RVO does and why it hurts. So first, it's sort of, you don't need a degree in economics to understand that if you turn a growth market into a shrinking market, you're going to have investors going the other way. And that's true if investors believe that social media is a shrinking market, if investors believe that gasoline is a shrinking market, they're going to flock to those markets that they believe are growing. So that's a critical part of this, because what the president, what the administration is proposing is not just cuts from a statutory increase. They're proposing cuts from what we actually achieved last year. So they're proposing for the oil companies to blend less gallons this year than they actually had to blend last year, and that's a terrible signal for investment. The second thing that's a little more complicated, and numerous people on this phone call have alluded to, is the RIN. And I want to be clear about why that's important. The RFS is necessary not because the biofuel industry needs a boost to compete. It's necessary because we do not exist. We do not have a competitive, price-driven free marketplace with regard to liquid fuels. It's price-controlled at the top by OPEC. It's heavily consolidated in this country. And it was recognized back when the RFS was passed that we needed a blunt force instrument to change that dynamic and get to the point where we have consumer choice and other types of fuels at the pump. And the way the program works is it has an alternative compliance mechanism, and that's the RIN. And if the oil companies do not want to blend liquid fuel, they can turn around and buy a RIN to get out of their compliance obligation under the program. That's an important thing for them because it adds flexibility to their annual compliance obligation. But the part that's often missed is investors in next-generation biofuels understand what that will create in the marketplace. They understand that when the oil industry gets together and decides we will not comply with the RFS, as they did this past summer, that means they will have to buy RINs, that increased demand for RINs will increase the price of a RIN, and that an increased price of a RIN will then incent other oil companies to blend more renewable fuel. So it gives them faith that there will ultimately be customers in the space for the fuel if they produce it. And that's how the RIN program is supposed to work. And all this happens, this sort of bunker busting of the oil monopoly happens without any consumer cost, because the RINs enter the marketplace for free, and so some oil companies benefit and some oil companies pay, and the ones that pay are actually not complying with the program. So what the president has done with this proposal, and we hope that he will turn it around, is he's in essence looked at the markets and said, well, actually, we think they're going to shrink. He's re-engineered the program to react rather than drive change in the marketplace, which means the change won't happen. And he's turned what has previously been the global gold standard with regard to advanced biofuels policy into a shell of its former self that will provide more opportunity for countries like Brazil and China to take these projects and facilities to their countries rather than have them developed here. And this is a president that was committed to creating new jobs and new industries. There's no better way to do it than this, and we hope that the administration will change its mind and change the proposal in the final rule.